Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
No fouls.
This is going to be Darling. He's got to go.
Darling puts it up.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, Roller Sports Talkers, Royal Real, straight from the boroughs. Today's Sunday, March 22nd. This is episode 224. I'm Gino. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Joe D along for the ride tonight. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, share our pages. If you want to tell us something, talk to us. We're picking games. Pick them with us. Let's talk some March Madness, guys. Darren. St. John's, big win today. Talk to me.
The Johnnies advance. They have a nice lead. They blow it. Most interesting way a game can end. Kansas has two fouls on them, despite being extremely physical on the offensive glass in the last 5 minutes. Not one of those was a foul, apparently. There were only fouls on the Johnnies. Right, Kev? Before you get
apparently
exploded,
there's no longer an over the back call. We've watched 4 days of college basketball. How many over the backs have you seen called? Period.
They're letting them play a little too much, somewhat.
And you know, just get to that before you get to the recap. I understand Kansas was a little bit more aggressive offensively. They should have had a foul advantage, but not 10-2. That was ridiculous.
So basically what happened, I mean, listen, we're gonna get into the whole game, but basically what happens is then Kansas does what I don't love. They commit four fouls, in the backcourt, but yeah, still leave time on the clock. So they gave him 4 seconds, Gino. I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, listen, I was going to ask, but finish your thought first.
Well, I like to let them dribble it up a little bit. I want them to be able to, with four fouls and the amount of time that was left, there shouldn't have been more than a second and a half to get a shot off. I thought that, especially with the deliberate play that the way St. John's plays offense, I thought Kansas mishandled it, especially the first two. They were just, as soon as he touched it, boom, foul. Kev?
I mean, St. John's kept throwing it backwards into the backcourt. Let them dribble it up. If you're St. Kansas, take a few seconds off. All you need is seconds. You're not talking about trying to take 10 seconds off. 2 or 3 seconds would be a wonderful way of Kansas to use those fouls, but they left St. John's way too much time, as it turned out.
No, I thought they certainly did.
And that's exactly my thought, Kev. I was thinking the same thing, is that if you're going to play it that way,
which was the right way to play it.
Correct. Then don't leave any time on the damn clock.
Right.
It's got to be a heave, right, Joe?
Yeah, and then if you looked at Self's face after the last one that they committed to get to six, even Bill Self kind of shook his head because he was even, I think, a little annoyed that they left him with 4 seconds. He was afraid that, Edgefor was going to get the ball, but, he left it just with Darling. Whoever got the ball, they had to shoot. There was going to be no pass back or anything.
Yeah, it was interesting because basically Darling was left one-on-one in the middle. Everybody covered the shooters. And Darling, I mean, listen, it was a contested layup, but he took a layup.
Yeah.
And he had 4 seconds from half court. Now, we all saw Tyus Edney go 4.2 from full court. So he had plenty of time. He had to adjust his shot a little bit. But Dylan Darling, who couldn't hit water from a boat most of this game, hits the game when he shot and becomes the hero for St. John's. And there was nobody outside of Hopkins that you felt good about watching on the offensive side this game, Kev.
Yeah, Darling was 0-for-4 before he hit the game winner. Like I said, Hopkins was great from the outside, 6-for-9.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Edgefor was 6-for-14. Hopkins was 6-for-13, but 6-for-9 from three. The problem was that Edgefor doesn't have the length sometimes, so he needs the pump fake to work for him. He didn't hit any of his threes. Hopkins was brought here for this reason, to be this guy, to replace R.J. Lewis. as the wing scorer, G, I see you nodding along. And he did that today because when Kansas had all the momentum, all of a sudden, Joe, we see Hopkins hit the three. Gives
That's
him
the lead,
stretches it out to four.
Yep, on that play. And then then Kansas gets the ball back, and they end up getting whatchamacallit was at the line. I just forgot his name.
Peterson?
Yeah, Peterson was at the he got fouled, and then he went up for the he hit the free throws to tie it, which came right back. And then and St. John's had no timeouts either.
No, they didn't use all their timeouts. And Rick doesn't really coach offense much. He's really all about the defensive side of the ball. The thing about it was that all of a sudden Kansas kind of exploded. They were getting offensive rebounds, but it looked like it was a little hacky, but they didn't call anything. St. John's didn't get any benefits of calls. You also like to see them go up with two hands on things, not one hand. But you know what? Incredible win for the Johnnies. First Sweet 16 since 99, G, right?
I was going to say they blew a 14-point lead, too.
They
did. In the middle of all this with about eight minutes left.
They couldn't grab a damn rebound.
No.
That was my thing, Kev. That offensive, there was no offensive rebounding. It felt like every three-pointer, they were already running back the other way. And they didn't shoot well at all. I mean, they were 11 for 35 from three. I mean, you know, I know Jackson likes to throw them up. And I know Hopkins was actually really good. He was 6 for 9 today. So take that out of the picture. And they were freaking 5 for 26. I mean, it's horrible. They have to rebound offensively. I mean, it was every play for like a four possession stretch. They came down, they launched a three. Kane's got the rebound down the other way, and it was like somebody's got to get a rebound. It was horrible. And
not only on the offensive side, but you know, Kansas came down. It's not like they shot great down the stretch.
No,
they missed plenty of shots.
Absolutely.
You're not going to get a defensive rebound either. That was the frustrating part the whole time, is that Kansas would miss two. They had, what, two or three shots, two or three chances every time down the court, it felt like, to put one in.
I mean, St. John's is going to have to shoot better next week to beat Duke. They're going to have to shoot better. If they don't shoot better, there's no chance of winning that game next week.
Frustration for me is Leotopoulos gets in there. Just stop, somebody tackle him. I mean, you're not hitting anything. You're a nightmare to watch. You're not even close. You know, Darling wasn't any better, really, but at least he'd been out there a little bit. Sanon didn't do anything. Went 1 for 8, 1 for 5 from three. I mean, they got nothing except for Prey, who hit a big three, actually. Gave him a little length early on. But the point Joe made, yes, with 8:08 to go, they had a 14-point lead. And that lead dissipated relatively quickly. They have a bunch of guys that don't seem to know how to finish. Nobody can hit a floater on this team. They don't even try to take them. They stop the dribble, and then they stand there in the paint looking to try to go over somebody much taller. And you see what Zubi has to go up against when he's not the biggest guy out there. He has trouble getting the shot off sometimes. He needs to be spaced out and be able to drive on you. Like you said, Gino, then there's nobody underneath to grab an offensive rebound. At the half, he had 9 and 8. He finished the game with 9 rebounds. He had 8 at the break.
Yeah.
He had 1 rebound in the second half.
And Darling, although, you know, makes the basket to win the game, he was that was his only basket of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was 0 for 8 going into that. I mean,
and there was a possession before that where he was dribbling and he had the chance to go in the lane and he pulled out. If you remember that, and he passed it off. That led to the Hopkins three anyway. But
yeah,
you know, yeah, they just and how are they going to do? You know, you got the Boozer brothers next.
Yep. Well, you know, the one Boozer brother isn't as good as the other one. I'll worry about the big guy, not the little guy.
Yeah.
All right, so Patino advances. St. John's lives to see another day. They will play next Friday, I'm assuming.
They are scheduled to play Friday against Duke. I would have to imagine that's going to be that CBS 9:30 game.
It's got
to
be the late
because game. It's in Washington, D.C., so you'll get a contingent of New Yorkers going down there along with the Duke fans. It'll be a big Duke contingent, but I think St. John's will be represented.
And the appetizer to that could be Michigan State UConn.
Yeah, it could be. Right now, it's tied with UCLA as we're doing the broadcast, or close to it anyway. You guys are always a little ahead of me, so I have no idea. Yeah. But it was time. But anyway, so March Madness, Kev, what are your thoughts on it so far? I know that you've been a little, a little leery of the Cinderella or lack thereof.
I wish we had seen more Cinderellas, to be honest with you. I mean, we love the Cinderella aspect. This is now two straight years of the top 16 teams, all the 1-4 seeds advanced. I mean, you know, you go back since COVID, you know, 2024, you had Oakland and Yale, 14-13. 2023, of course, you had Fairleigh Dickinson, the 16, Princeton, the 15, Furman, the 13. 2021 was the incredible year. Oral Roberts, Abilene Christian, Ohio, North Texas, all 13s through 15s advancing. Second straight year, we don't have anything below a 12. And we only had 1-12, and that was High Point.
Yep.
We had 1-11, Texas. And I don't consider Texas from the SEC any sort of Cinderella team.
Number one endowment, and, yeah. You know, in all of college sports. Anyway.
I mean, at this point, going into the Sweet 16, to me, the biggest Cinderella now in the Sweet 16 is probably Iowa because they just knocked off number one Florida. And yeah. Iowa, if Iowa is your biggest Cinderella,
post NIL, this is what you're going to get, Kev.
And I know that's what's the problem with it.
Well, here's the thing. To be honest with you, compared to last year, we've had a lot of finishes this year.
Oh,
we've had a lot of excitement. We've actually had good basketball. What they've made this tournament into now is it's college football. It's a playoff of the best teams. There's just more of them. Yeah. Okay? It's a one-and-done scenario. Yes, Gino.
And there may be more of them next year.
Yeah, no, they could increase it by another 8. But what they've done is they've made it the football tournament, okay? The best teams are going to play. Listen, outside of Furman giving UConn a little bit of trouble, Kennesaw bothering Gonzaga, Cal Baptist making an epic comeback to make it look close against Kansas, we didn't get much. And the four of us were in Atlantic City.
Siena made their run against Duke.
They honestly did. They actually made the first half run, and then Duke kind of like.
And they lost their coach today.
Yes, not a big secret. He was going to end up at Syracuse, in my opinion. They wanted the guy from St. Louis, but he refused to leave.
But he
signed a contract. A man of honor. You don't get that very often in college sports. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, from Syracuse's perspective, I think going to McNamara here after 2 years as the head coach, I think that's great. For just getting that experience of being head coach for a couple of years.
And he's a guy that wanted at that school, as did Autry, by the way. It wasn't like Autry wasn't a successful guy. But the move to the ACC has been a nightmare for Syracuse, nightmare for Pittsburgh, nightmare for Boston College. It just hasn't worked out. Even when UConn wasn't in the Big East, it was a nightmare for them. It's just, unfortunately, football's where the dollars are. You know,
of course, we could have coached at Siena Duke games, considering he never made a sub until 10 seconds left in the game.
Pretty much.
That's true.
Pretty much. But, I mean,
you're by five. You're out there.
But before we get into a couple of the big games, let's get into a couple of quick seeding things. Okay, against St. John's with the 5, wasn't affected with the 12, okay? They kind of controlled Northern Iowa. But Vandy had to basically play a road game last night against Nebraska. Well, Vandy should not have been a 5. And that was kind of a mess to me.
Great job by Nebraska traveling, but my goodness, that was rough for a band to be playing in that environment.
And, you know, watching the end of that game, Joe, that half-court heave should have went.
Yeah. I mean, unreal.
You know.
I mean, Tyler, I mean, he had it.
Yeah.
And somehow it didn't go. I mean, it was, what, two-thirds or three-quarters of the way down, it felt like.
It was in, and then boom.
It looked like a purer shot than the one we saw Owe hit the day before. It really looked purer, and he thought he had it, and that's what made it interesting. But the team that was the weirdest to me was Miami, okay? And I know there were 7. So they start them off against Missouri and St. Louis, who's a 10. And they have to battle, but they pull away late.
Yep.
They play the late Friday game. They get them the 12 o'clock Sunday game. Are you kidding me? I mean, really, how badly – do you guys want to determine who's going to advance in these games? That's a joke. That can't happen. Let this team get a little bit of rest. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, I listen, we all like Purdue. It's a great story. I think they would have won anyway. But these guys played. They were playing until 1 in the morning. Then they're coming back less than, you know,
36 hours.
They're on the court. in the hostile place with the bigger crowd going for the other team. I don't know. It seemed like a lot to me. There was definitely some seeding questions I had, Gino.
Who do you want them to switch, though? It's all TV related.
I know. Give me any of the games. I don't want any of the games.
I think that's the problem, Darren. It's television. Because
it's all TV related.
On Friday, San Diego, where the St. John's games were, started at 1:50. Started at 1:15 in the afternoon, 10:15 a.m. San Diego time. When the last game that tipped off of the night was the UConn game in Philadelphia, tipped off at 10 o'clock at night. How does Philadelphia tip off at 10 o'clock at night in San Diego? It doesn't make any sense.
I get your point, but here's my thing. Are you going to tell me that Purdue is this huge television draw?
No, that's why they're at 12 o'clock.
Basketball is this huge basketball draw?
Neither one of them.
So that's why they do a TV.
That's why they play
the decision is useless.
No, but that's why they're 12 o'clock, Darren. It's because they're not a draw.
For a reason. Who was yesterday at 12 o'clock? Who was yesterday at 12 o'clock?
Michigan.
It's a Saturday, not a Sunday.
Who was yesterday at 12 o'clock?
Doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. It was Duke.
Michigan.
And it's always a big singular team at the noon game, Saturday or Sunday.
It's usually Michigan or Duke.
And that's not a good reason, G.
It is.
That's not.
You don't like it, but it is.
Gino, you're wrong. I don't know what to tell you.
Darren, look at the games today. Who do you want to put it that in that position and move Miami-Purdue with a very little television backing? Where do you want to move them to?
You're right. They shouldn't be on the True TV game. They should be on CBS. You got to be kidding me with your argument. It doesn't make sense.
What time do you want to move them?
7 o'clock, 6:30,
7:15.
Right.
So who are you moving to noon?
On at the same time, Gino.
Who are you moving to noon?
Any of the other
Don't tell me any of them. You said they shouldn't be playing there. So one of the games has to be there. So who are you putting?
Okay, let me tell you. Tennessee,
Virginia.
I'll do the games now. I'm sorry because I wasn't for this
Tennessee,
question,
Virginia, absolutely not.
That's a better game than Purdue against
Tennessee, Virginia would be
Miami.
The primary. How about that?
Okay. Listen, if you're talking about television following, both of the games probably do about the same. So, okay, fine. So that's a good one. There you go.
Do you think that Tennessee, Virginia is not bigger than Purdue and Miami?
I do. That's why it's later in the day, Darren.
But there's three games on at this point. There's not a primary single
game. You can't have this both ways, Darren. I told you fine, and you just argued the reverse point.
You're having it both ways.
No, I'm not.
You are.
That to me, from a television standpoint, that is probably the worst game of the day. They put it on at 12 o'clock. There you go.
That was the worst game than Arizona, Utah State.
To me, you've got one of the one seeds, Arizona, playing right now on True TV.
Yeah.
Arizona should not be playing on True TV. That Purdue-Miami game could very well
I don't care now. What channel it's on. It's the time. You are not putting a big television audience team at 12 o'clock Eastern time. You're not. You're not. Rank the eight games today. The worst two are either the Tennessee game or the Purdue game. That's the first game of the day.
Vote on this, pal.
That's it. That's the first game of the day.
I think you're missing the boat, pal.
I'm not. You are.
Sunday are very different. I don't think they're different at all.
Oh, completely.
Why?
Why?
Because Sunday you want the late audience on the West Coast. That's why.
What are you talking about?
Saturday you want the early audience.
No, Joe. Tell us your thoughts because we're obviously at an impasse.
So the first game, the only game that they definitely got right was St. John's, Kansas, being the lead into 60 minutes. That was the best game. I mean, might not turn out to be the best game. Could you have put Iowa and Virginia at the top of the list?
Tennessee, Virginia, Iowa, Florida.
That's right. Iowa, Florida could have been a lead dog at 12 o'clock too.
Where were they playing?
They were playing in Greenville. Wasn't it South Carolina? I think it was a Virginia crowd. I don't know why. I honestly don't see the difference between Saturday and Sunday night. I don't really get it.
The No, that was not your point. Your point is 12 o'clock Saturday, 12 o'clock Sunday. That was the point.
I don't see the difference between Saturday at noon and Sunday. You have a standalone game on your major network.
There is. Okay, we can disband this conversation, but there is a major difference television-wise. Major. It's not even close.
I don't really get what you're talking about, but all right.
Well, we'll move on. Next point.
Well, listen, you know what? The simple fact is that you can say whatever the hell you want about TV. Miami got screwed.
I have no question that they didn't get screwed. But if you're telling me that they should not have played at 12 o'clock, that's fine.
And you bring it back.
You brought it back.
I said they got screwed.
I agree they did get screwed.
We'll move on.
There you go. I agree. They did get screwed.
Well, finally. You finally agree.
I do agree. All I asked you is what team you want to put in that game.
And I gave you.
You told me it didn't matter.
I said Tennessee, Virginia.
I said okay. And you continued.
I didn't, because you kept making these little stupid comments at the end about ratings, because you know so much about it. Anyway, let's get on to the other big games we had of the weekend. Thursday, we had a few good ones, guys. We really did. So Thursday, High Point, Wisconsin was outstanding. Kev?
Yeah, great game, 83-82. I mean, everything we expected. You know, we talked about it last week. We thought it was going to be high scoring. It was going to be competitive. And the amazing stat to come out of that, Chase Johnston with the finger roll to win it. Chase Johnston this year, overall, his field goal attempts, 72 for 151, okay? From three, he was 71 for 146. He was 1 for 5 from two-point range. The one make from two-pointer was the layup he made to beat Wisconsin, 83-82.
And then you look at
how does that happen?
And then you look at High Point. They gave Arkansas a game last night.
Oh, that was a great game.
I mean, that was back and forth. I mean, Acuff is Acuff. And if he's not a top three pick, I don't know who's a top three pick. But, I mean, listen, G, we wanted to see DeBonsa. We wanted to see Peterson. Acuff might be the guy to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's definitely a top three.
He was unreal in that game.
That Arkansas game, Rob Martin, 30 points. He had a great game for High Point, too.
The guards went back and forth shot for shot, Joe. I mean, it was like Martin was not intimidated by Acuff and vice versa. Just not enough at the end. But High Point did something interesting. They flew their fans into this game. They made it seem like it was kind of mixed, which I thought was really cool. But High Point's a very expensive school. They have a campus that's like Disney World. They have everything going on there. And they have money, and that's the only way you're going to be able to compete in the mid-major world, like Kev was talking about, because the tournament, as we know it, has changed, guys. It's just not the same tournament. TCU Ohio State, Joe, kicked us off. It wasn't a bad game. We had a game that went down to the final there as well.
No, it was a good one. It was a good one. And the crowd was good in AC. They were all pumped up for it. It got off to a good start. It was a good game to kick off the day. They always pick a decent game to kick off. Because it was a little bit of a back and forth, but it was excellent.
Duke Siena, Gino, we had an interesting one there. Siena led by, 13 in the first half in this one, guys?
Yeah.
And, people were nervous, but like Kev said before, not a lot of subs in this game until about a minute left. I think the kids just ran out of gas, guys.
Yeah. I mean, Duke never grabbed the lead till 4:25 left. I mean, that Siena gave everything they had. Maybe McNamara, as they were building the lead in the first half, should have found a couple of minutes here and there for the starters so they weren't running on fumes at the end. First sub with 10 seconds left, and the kid played about 2 or 3 seconds. It would have been the first time since 79 that a team did not go to the bench at all in a tournament game. I mean, Iron Man basketball is incredible performance by Siena.
What was that, Michigan State, right, in 79, they said?
It was against Michigan State.
Oh, Indiana? Was it Indiana State against Michigan State?
Or was it who played them? Was it Princeton?
Maybe it was Princeton or Penn. Maybe it was one of those guys that played them before. And then the other one was, Joe, your beloved Carolina Tar Heels found a way to blow a game.
That was a complete debacle. It would have St. John's would have been in the same spot if they would have blown this lead today. But Carolina just, they folded up the tens. They had a 19-point lead, the biggest lead given up in an NCAA tournament game, or close to it. It was absolute disaster. Hubert didn't. He might be out of a job tomorrow. That seems to be the strong opinion.
Well, Gino, can North Carolina afford to be mediocre in college basketball?
No.
Even though Hubert Davis is royalty, I mean, right, Kev? I mean, you know, you can only be royalty so far. Patrick Ewing was royalty at Georgetown. They had no problem letting him go.
That's
Chris
true.
Mullen was royalty at St. John's. No problem moving him on. I think Hubert's going to be gone because they expect to win.
There's a level here. I saw a stat. Roy Williams, 20 years there, three times not making the tournament or not getting out of the first round. Three times in 20 years. Hubert's done it three out of his 5 years there. And they love Hubert Davis there. It's going to kill them to get rid of him. But they're going to have to make the move. You can't blow a 19-point lead the way they did. I mean, we were watching the game. And, Joe, you put it perfectly. They closed everything up with about 8 minutes left. And stopped playing the way they play for the first 32 minutes.
Yeah.
And decided to try to kill the clock and killed any offensive flow. And they just looked stagnant the rest of the way.
They Trimble, it was like Verser and Trimble, even at the end of the game, they looked horrible that last possession. It was like they looked like a kiddie core out there. I mean, somewhere Dean Smith's rolling over in his grave. Because when Dean was the coach, did they ever not get to the Sweet 16? They were automatic. You could fill out your bracket and start with Carolina in the Sweet 16 and then work it back from there. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It was a horrible performance. And they don't go with the Caleb Wilson thing. You know, that's over and done with. You haven't had him for 10 games. They're obviously much different without him after they beat Duke at home with him. But the fact is Carolina is definitely going to make a change, and we'll see who they bring in. Is there any Carolina royalty left that's coaching-wise? Is it Stackhouse?
Listen, I don't know who it's going to be. Stackhouse didn't win at Vandy, so I don't know why you'd bring him in here. I think it's going to be someone that's winning somewhere else, and you offer him one of the five most prestigious jobs in college basketball. I mean, you know, you figure it's behind Duke and, you know, maybe UConn over the last few years and stuff like that, but it's up there with everybody else. I mean, it's a Kansas, you know, it's a true blue blood.
Yeah.
And the first year when they made the final with Hubert, that wasn't his team.
No, that was Roy's team.
That was Roy's team. He, with his team, we haven't seen much, and that's the problem. So I think that UNC will be on their way out. I mean, the other one that was interesting that day was South Florida Louisville. I know they lost. Louisville shot like 55% from the floor. South Florida shot like 32. They couldn't hit anything. But they were down 21. They cut that thing to 4. They had a chance. They just couldn't hit water from a boat. I had South Florida on the money line. I was rooting hard. I mean, but nonetheless, I thought that, Louisville without Brown, Michael Brown, really is not the same team. And then we saw that yesterday against Michigan State where they hung around for a while. But unless McNeely's hitting everything he puts up, Louisville had no real shot to win that game. On Friday, we had probably the best finish that we've ever seen in the tournament, or one of them, right, G?
Yeah, absolutely.
Santa Clara against Kentucky. Santa Clara comes down, hits the three. What was it, 2.4? Sendek trying to get the timeout, chasing the lead official, not the trail official. Not blaming Sendek, not blaming the lead official, not blaming the trail official. Doesn't get the timeout. Owe pulls up just around half court, buries a banker that looked like it was offline, but from where he was shooting it from, went right in, went to overtime where Kentucky kind of took control, and anyone that had Kentucky -3.5 was happy about the overtime. Anyone that had Santa Clara +3.5 would have rather the game end in regulation. But it was about as quick a reaction of a three and a three as you could possibly see. Almost matched last night in the Vanderbilt Nebraska game, but not quite. And that's kind of really where we stood there. Friday, I mean, we really didn't have a lot of great games. I mean, Cal Baptist, like we said, made the late run. Furman hung around against UConn, but they never really could go over the top. UCLA, UCF was close, but again, 10-7 game, you expect it to be close, so it wasn't that big a to-do. Then we get to yesterday, guys. And I know we all make fun of them. There's not a Cinderella, but Texas beats Gonzaga. It's a big win.
It's an upset, but it's not Cinderella.
Nah. Well, like I said last week, in my opinion anyway, Gonzaga's not the same team because the guard play isn't the same. The big man matchup, it was almost like a good old school big man matchup between Texas and I've never pronounced the Texas kid's name right. And yet I can get EK out of Ike, but I can't pronounce the other kid's name. I'm not going to try. But we had that one. And then obviously last night we also had Nebraska Vandy, which we talked about, and Arkansas High Point, which we mentioned as well. And then today, Iowa, Florida, guys. Thoughts on this one? Did anyone see this one coming? Because I didn't.
No. It was a shocker. I mean, we know how hard it is to win back-to-back titles. And, you know, I thought Florida was going to get out of the Sweet 16. I thought they were going to have trouble, especially if they played Houston in Houston, in the Elite Eight. Never saw this coming against Iowa. I thought Florida, especially the way they looked against Prairie View, they just looked like they were so geared up for this tournament, and to come out and lose the way they did today, shocking.
I mean, Gino, easily the biggest upset of the tournament so far?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. There are not many people that had Iowa upsetting Florida today, so that definitely got to be the biggest upset we've seen so far anyway.
Joe, a lot of stones on the kid that hits the three from the corner.
Yeah, he just, you know, that's it. What did he set the puppies and knock it down? That was
He's the kid that got the double technical earlier for throwing kind of like a punch into the scrum. To try to punch the ball out. Didn't aim at the guy's head or anything. But he did get a double technical, buried the three. We had that. Tennessee and Virginia was great down to the very end. Excellent game, actually. Vols hold on and, you know, advance as a six over the three Virginia.
Well, there was the technical late in that game, too. Well, it wasn't a technical. What did they call it?
They called it a dead ball.
Dead ball, flagrant foul or something.
No, they called it dead ball technical, non-flagrant. So they got to put whoever they wanted at the line. And it's a stupid move. You can't push the guy in the back. Obviously, it wasn't a major push. Yeah. It shouldn't have been something that decided the game. It really didn't because they ended up winning by seven. But it was interesting. And, you know, listen, overall, thoughts on the tournament, Kev?
And as we speak, Utah State just cut it to four with under 5 minutes left against Arizona. So upset watch there. Maybe by the time we'll be done with the podcast, likely before the game ends, but there's a chance we may lose the second number one seed. And for a lot of us, maybe our title and our brackets will be busted right now.
That's my title, champ. And yet, I'd like to see Utah State win. So there you go.
the Mountain West, the much maligned Mountain West, especially by us.
Yeah, well, they blew out of Villanova on Friday. Well, not blew them out, but they beat them by 10. And now they're giving Arizona everything they want. Arizona struggled shooting in this game. But anyway, sorry, Kev.
I mean, overall, I mean, like you said, Darren, bunch of good finishes the last 3 or 4 days. A little chalky. You know, you'd like to see a few more upsets sprinkled in there. But, you know, a better tournament than last year, I think, overall. And nothing beats being in Atlantic City or Sportsbook. I'm sure Vegas is the same way. We haven't been there in 25-plus years. But just to be in Atlantic City with the money on the games and the crowd into it. We were in a conference room with, what would you say, about 300 people?
Yeah, it was a good crowd.
And when you've got, you know, these race to 10 bets, race to 15 bets that, you know, people are into the games right from the tip-off, rooting for their team to be the first one to score 10 points or 15 points. And then, of course, by the time you get to the end of the games, I mean, we had guys that were so into the games.
Absolutely. Some real intensity.
It's just, I mean, it's by far and away the best weekend of the year.
We have a great time with it. G, explain the 3-2-1 bet that we found out about.
New bet. We found out there's a 3-2-1 bet that is offered to start the game. It is the first team to score a three-pointer, a two-pointer, and a free throw. That's your 3-2-1. We played a couple of those. you know, Along with a lot of the other bets, it's a complete crapshoot whether or not it's going to hit or not. Obviously, you got a better shot with a team that scores more points, but who the hell knows at the beginning of those games? So,
yep.
And Joe, explain your little first to 4 minute bet that you had out there today.
Oh, today was the first. Whoever had the lead after 4 minutes, it was for the first 2 days of the tournament. In running statistics and different things, it looks like the teams that overall are going to get beat, or the worst seeded teams, usually have usually end up scoring early against these big powerhouses. And we ended up going, the first day was 10-6 with the worst seeded team leading, was the first team to 10 in the games. It evened out the second day, it was 8-8. And then, but when you get to the Saturday and Sunday, that's kind of thrown out the window, first to 10, because the team's getting closer and closer. But today's action was on the first 4 minutes, the team who had the lead after 4 minutes. So that way, in some of these games, it was like a 6-4 game after 4 minutes. They come up a little tight, some of these guys. Interestingly, the next ones to look at for the Sweet 16 is a lot of these games are now played in bigger arenas. When I talk about big arenas, I'm talking about, like, Houston's going to play it in NRG Stadium where the Texans play. So these young guys, as much as they play basketball their whole life, are not used to playing in some of these big places. The other thing is these big places are bringing in baskets that are not used. You know, you play in a gym like Dayton, they're playing on those hoops every single day. Well, they're not playing on these all the time. So the iron is truly unkind. So there's something into looking at first half unders, still researching it, though, in these games, because some of these guys, they're not used to playing in these big places, and there's a depth to playing there. It, as much as, you know, we might say, oh, she's still shooting a basket, if we remember Hoosiers, you know, it's still, you know, 10 feet high and all this. But the bottom line is, it is different. And for some of these guys, this is their first time playing in front of 30 or 40,000 people, 50,000 or 60,000, I should say, in some of these gigantic arenas. So there is something to be said for that. So that's going to be an interesting thing to look at for Thursday and Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, so Thursday night in that South, you get Iowa, Nebraska now, and you get Illinois, Houston.
And where are those games?
That's going to be Thursday night in Houston. Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Houston. In San Jose, we're going to get Texas, Purdue, and Arkansas against the – it looks like Zoner probably holds on here against the Arizona-Utah State winner. That's also Thursday night. Friday in D.C., we get St. John's, Duke, and Michigan State. Right now, UConn leads at the half against UConn, or Michigan State against UCLA. And then in Chicago on Friday night, Tennessee, Iowa State, Michigan against the Texas Tech, Alabama winner. So I don't know the Midwest Thursday night game between Houston and Houston and Illinois looks really interesting to me. That's a final Elite Eight matchup. That's not a Sweet 16 matchup.
That's the South, Darren.
I'm sorry, South. It's in Houston. Yeah. You got me. So sorry.
No, I'm just trying to make sure I'm following you.
You win, I lose.
Well, which one of those?
Illinois, Houston. To me, that's an Elite Eight matchup. It's not really a Sweet 16 matchup to me. This is a very early matchup of two excellent teams.
Well, let's see. So you got then that winner of that game goes on to the Iowa Nebraska winner.
Yep. Which seems much more like a Sweet 16 game than an Elite Eight game to me. I don't know. I just think that Illinois, Houston playing each other, should there ever be a thought of reseeding once we get into the 16?
It screws up the brackets too much.
I know. It messes everything up.
No. You'd never be able to do it. That would never happen.
It wouldn't be allowed. And then, obviously, St. John's Duke on Friday night will be, both games in D.C. will be great, whether it's Michigan State UConn or Michigan State UCLA and then St. John's Duke. Should have a really good tournament, guys. Any other points? Any other comments? Well, anything else you want to bring up?
It will be interesting Friday night because they're basically going to play in Georgetown's home arena, And you go, so it's going to be a heavy Big East crowd, because the Georgetown people probably got some of the tickets already just for the fact that the game is in their arena. Plus you add St. John's and UConn. If UConn gets in, those people, it's going to be – and Duke people travel like there's no tomorrow. And Michigan State's no slouch. That's probably going to be the best of this, the best region right now, I think, to finish up in the next, you know, the next round.
That's not a surprise. I mean, we thought that was the heaviest. We thought that was the heaviest part of the bracket to begin with, the East. So,
yeah, and even if it was Kansas over St. John's, it would still be ridiculous.
I think people would take those four teams for the Final Four. If it was, if somebody said you could have a Final Four of Duke, St. John's, Michigan State, and UConn, people would sign up for that now.
Yeah.
Forget about just
Final Four.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your brackets, boys? Anyone feeling? I know G had a tough one with his runner up, but you know, that happens. But I mean, but the rest of your bracket's been pretty good. A lot of people were pretty good with their Sweet 16 in the first round. I think Friday there were no underdogs that won.
Yeah,
they may have covered, but nobody won.
I felt good until I compared to my daughter's bracket.
So, yeah, she's in first place in the pool going in. I think she lost that, though. She had Gonzaga going pretty far. So I think she took a little hit. She had Florida going. But everybody had Florida going. So that's not a bad blow for her. We'll see how the rest of it goes.
But the consensus bracket we did, we have 10. We currently have 10 of the 13 Sweet 16 teams with three games left to play. So
who do we have in the three? We have UConn, Arizona, and I'm assuming
Alabama.
I didn't know if it was Texas Tech or Alabama.
Yep, okay. Alabama. No, we actually had Akron
13 for 16.
We had Akron beating Texas Tech in the first round. So,
that was our genius move. Akron got blown out by 20. That's my fault. I talked you guys into Akron. anything else, Kev?
Yeah, last thought. Just the tournament in general. I think people say, oh, why do these small schools get the automatic qualifiers? Why are they there? This and that. One of the moments that I think just symbolizes the whole March Madness was that Arizona-LIU game. I know Arizona crushed LIU. LIU brought in the backup guard, Eddie Muniac.
Mm-hmm.
He had played 2 minutes all year. He came in late in the game when they beat LeMoyne back in January. They let him come in with under a minute left. They let him come in. He banks in a three-pointer. First points of the year. He now has played 3 minutes. He's got 3 points. He's the leading scorer, points per minute, in the NCAA. He's averaging a point a minute. But, that's the type of thing that these small schools, he'll never forget it. And those are the moments that, these small schools and these little players get a chance to have their couple of seconds of fame. And those are great moments.
It used to be that, like you said, Kev, the smaller schools used to be great because you'd find these senior-laden smaller schools or mid-major schools that would sit there and they grow and they play together for 2 or 3 years, take their lumps as sophomores. As juniors get a little better, as seniors, they're out there with one like sophomore that chips in and a junior that helps out on the boards. And they're able to compete against a very, very talented, high-major team. Younger and didn't play together as long and a little sloppy with the ball. Now what happens is you get that kid for 2 years and he shows signs, somebody pays him and he leaves. And that mid-major or that low major doesn't really have the opportunity to kind of compete now. And that's unfortunately where the NIL is. Do you think we have to do something about the NIL, Gino, or do you think it's nothing matter? It doesn't matter what we say. It's never going anywhere.
I don't think it's going anywhere, but at the same time, they need to do something across all of college sports because the way this is working right now is just a complete mess. So,
it's interesting. If we had NIL, was about 25 years ago, would we really have Gonzaga today? Because if you remember, Gonzaga made that point. They were the real Cinderella story that year. Dan Munson led them. They got to the Elite Eight.
Before then, NIL, Joe.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely. Saying. That's my point. My point is if we didn't have Gonzaga 25 years, if Gonzaga was around now, they would never – that school would never be heard from ever again, except that John Stockton went there. You would never know about – because these guys would have gone there. They would have, like Darren said, a year. Chet Holmgren would have never made it out of there. Or Drew Timmy and those guys. They would have been long gone after their freshman or sophomore years, if they even went to Gonzaga at that point. But Gonzaga is proof that you don't need the NIL. You just got to have a good program. And then once you get on the map, and they never left. I mean, really, they were out in the, what was it, they were in the WAC originally or the West Coast.
Yeah, they've been out in the WCC for a while.
Yeah. So, but that's it.
They're leaving next year. They're going to the PAC. But it's not your fault.
Yeah, we're not talking UCLA and USA. I mean,
no, we're talking about the Mountain West.
Yeah,
graduating.
And you guys alluded to it earlier. Maybe we do need to look at. I mean, they'll never do this either. But look at different conference structures for football and basketball, because the only reason why Syracuse, Pitt, and BC, and even Rutgers left the Big East was all for this football money, and they all get. Part of my French, their ass handed to them every single Saturday during the college football season, even though they're making a ton of money. But their basketball teams are getting run off the court for the most part. When was the last time you heard BC's name mentioned at all since they left the Big East? Maybe once?
It hasn't been good. Neither is Syracuse, really. Neither is Pitt, really.
And you know what they forget? They lost out playing their tournament in Madison Square Garden, where no matter what, the eyes of New York City, whether people want to believe it or not, but we're all from the boroughs, so we know. But whether people want to believe it or not, everybody in New York watches, or the basketball people watch, the Big East tournament. And you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And all these other schools left. For what reason? You know, Miami left, yeah. Miami's the only one who made a name for themselves on the football.
Joe, side. Money.
I understand that.
Okay, well, that's why they left. They left for money. There were money reasons why they left. That's why they left. You want to go back and redo that? Fine, but that's why they left, buddy.
No doubt. It just, the tournament is not, listen, it's been an exciting tournament. There's been some good basketball. And by the way, you mentioned of Gonzaga. Dylan Darling, by the way, for those that don't know, grew up in Spokane, averaged 32 points a game, led his team, led the state in points. And was not recruited by hometown Gonzaga. Ended up starting at Washington State, transferred to Idaho State, and now is at St. John's and is the hero for New Yorkers. So that's how big Gonzaga's gotten. They had like a I'm just to make your point about Gonzaga. Yes. That's how big they've gotten. They didn't need this kid that was like these. I think he averaged 8 rebounds, six assists, and 5 steals as a senior, and didn't even recruit him. And he was right in their backyard. Just one of those things.
By the way, did you see the post-game interview with him and Lauren, I can't say her name right, Shashadri, where she asked Darling, what did Coach say to you in the huddle? He was yelling at me the whole time. There you go. There was no words of wisdom. It was just, but Patino, like you said, coach's defense. Don't worry, the offense will come.
Any other final points before we wrap it up? All right, boys, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, Gino, and Joe tonight. Talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where two idiots can get into a fight about TV ratings on a Sunday in the first round of a playoff. I'll take the biggest blame. I'll be idiot number one. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. If you don't like the show, lie and pretend you do. Ran into a lot of guys from the boroughs in AC this week that were betting along and rooting for St. John's with us. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That's amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.